Fatherless Fanny by Anonymous. Chapter 10. An Adventure. Fanny had always been accustomed to early rising from her infancy, and therefore, unless she went to bed very late indeed, she always, in fine weather, took a walk before breakfast. As Lady Maria Ross was a dormouse, she knew nothing of this indulgence, or she would not have suffered a girl of such extraordinary beauty as Fanny to go strolling in the park of a morning, accompanied only by her maid, who was very little older than herself, and far less fit to be trusted. The grove in the deer park was Fanny's favorite stroll, and one beautiful morning in May, having taken a longer round than usual, she determined to rest herself beneath the shade of one of the large trees in that beautiful spot. Her maid, Betty, had seated herself near her mistress on the grass, and was expatiating in her simple dialect on the preference that ought to be given a walk, such as they had had, to the unwholesome custom of lying in bed in a close room until the sun was ready to burn their noses, to use an expression of her own. "Well, the ladies may want to wear such a heap of red powder on their cheeks, Miss Fanny," continued the girl, "for sure enough they stew themselves so they must be for all the world like a boiled turnip until they have daubed themselves over with paint. Well, miss, you take the right method to look ruddy and wholesome, and that's what makes people call you so deadly pretty. Yes, and look, there stands a gentleman as thinks so, I am sure, for he looks for all the world as if he was planet-struck, as my grandmother used to call it. Do, dear Miss Fanny, just look at him. It will do your heart good to see what a fool he looks like." Fanny turned mechanically to look at the object Betty had pointed out to her. At a little distance from the spot where she was sitting, she beheld a tall gentleman habited in black, of the most elegant form, whose countenance wore the interesting cast of settled melancholy. His large dark eyes were fixed upon Fanny, with a look of inquiry in which sorrow seemed blended with curiosity. So absorbed, too, was he in the contemplation, that he attempted not to withdraw his eyes when Fanny turned to observe him. Confused at the scrutinizing glances of the stranger, Fanny arose to depart without making any answer to Betty's animadversions. "There, miss," said the girl in a discontented tone, "now you must go and stew yourself up at home instead of taking the fresh air as you ought to do, and all along with that saucy jackanapes staring at you so. Well, I wish I was a man. I would soon teach him better manners." Fanny walked on in silence and with a hurried step, whilst Betty followed her reluctantly and continually turning her head to observe the stranger. At length she exclaimed, "Well, to be sure, if that dismal-looking man is not following us, I wish I may never be married." "Betty," replied Fanny in an angry tone, "you behave so ridiculously that it is no wonder you excite the notice of everybody that passes." "Dear me, Miss Fanny, don't go to lay the blame upon me, for you know very well the gentleman is looking at you, so that I dare say he does not know I am here, no more than nothing at all." Betty talked so loud and stared about her so, that she verified Fanny's accusation of attracting the notice of everybody that passed her. A gentleman on horseback had been observing her some time, and when he drew quite near, he jumped off his horse, and giving it to his groom, he came up to the terrified Fanny, and placing himself familiarly by her side, "For heaven's sake, my sweet girl," said he, attempting to take her hand, "where did you pick up that strange monster for an attendant? I am sure you might get a good price for her at Exeter Change to be shown amongst the wild beasts. Do you take her out with you to serve as a foil to your beauty?" Fanny made no reply to this unmeaning jargon, but Betty felt herself so exasperated at the mention of being shown amongst wild beasts that she could not contain her spleen, and she said in an angry tone of voice that some people found fault with some people was a deal more properer to be sent amongst the wild beasts than those they sneered at. And I wish, added she, tossing her head disdainfully, that those that be dressed like gentlemen behaved like gentlemen, and not go about affronting young ladies that are walking quietly along. The idea of ranking herself with the lady never entered poor Betty's head, but the gentleman understood her that she meant to be included amongst the young ladies she had mentioned, and he burst into an immoderate fit of laughter, and throwing his arm familiarly round Fanny's waist, he expressed his hopes that she was not affronted with him, and as to the other young lady, he did not care about her. Distressed and terrified beyond expression, Fanny struggled to get from her persecutor, who seemed equally diverted by her terror and her attendant's angry remonstrances. As it was early in the morning, but few people were in the park, and the gentleman who had assailed Fanny, feeling no fear of a rescue, amused himself by seeming to let her escape and then catching her again, until her exhausted spirits gave way and she burst into tears. At that moment, the stranger, whose observation of Fanny had first excited Betty's loud exclamations, advanced to the assistance of the distressed girl, and waving his hand with an air of dignity that immediately awed the rude object of his resentment, "Desist, sir," said he in a tone of authority. "That young lady shall not be insulted whilst I can protect her." "And pray, sir," said the brute, "who are you?" "A man," replied the majestic stranger, "and that is a title you can lay no claim to, whilst you debase yourself so low as to insult a defenceless woman." Ashamed of the part he had acted, and yet unwilling to acknowledge his error, the gentleman appeared inclined to resent the interference of Fanny's protector, and muttered something about satisfaction. But with a dignity truly irresistible, the interesting stranger again waved his hand. "Begone," said he, "and talk not of having sustained any degradation from me, since it is impossible, by the utmost exertion of malice, to place you in a more despicable light than that in which I first beheld you." Then, turning to Fanny, "Rely safely on my protection, sweet girl," said he, "and rest assured that I would sooner forfeit my life than suffer you to be insulted." Confused beyond the power of expression, Fanny could only curtsy in silence to her deliverer, and pursue her way toward home with a quickened step, in which agitation and alarm were still visible. Her persecutor, however, had quitted the park, and mounting his horse was out of sight in a minute. As he turned away from her, however, he said in an insulting tone, he hoped that, as she had found somebody more to her mind, she would act conformably to her own real character, and not give herself airs that did not belong to her. "My dear young lady," said the benevolent stranger who had just rescued Fanny, "I feel persuaded that you are as innocent as you look, but I entreat you in future not to walk out without some attendant more proper to protect you than the one you have now got. This town and its ways, I can perceive, are new to you, and you are therefore more liable to encounter such treatment as that which you have just escaped from. And believe me, you may not always be so fortunate as you have now been. My sex are in general the staunch supporters of each other, and but too much inclined to join in oppressing rather than protecting those whose guardians they are by the laws of nature and humanity. The strong resemblance you bear to a dear departed friend of mine first attracted my notice, and as I gazed upon your features, a train of melancholy reflections crowded upon my mind, and I mechanically and without design followed your footsteps. I am most happy that I did so, as it gave me an opportunity of being of service to you." Fanny thanked her deliverer in terms of grateful respect, and assured him that in future she would never venture to walk out unprotected. They had now reached the confines of the park, and as they were preparing to cross the road into Park Lane, Colonel Ross overtook them on horseback. He immediately dismounted, and giving his horse in charge to his groom, joined the party, with astonishment painted in his countenance. Fanny, who saw that he expected an explanation, briefly related the circumstances of the insults she had received, and acknowledged the kind interference of the benevolent stranger. When Colonel Ross had listened to the recital, he thanked the stranger for his timely assistance to his young ward, adding, in a tone that showed he did not wish to cultivate the acquaintance, "The young lady being now under the immediate protection of her guardian, your walk, sir, need not be any further interrupted." And then, with a stiff bow, he wished the gentleman a good morning. The bow was returned with equal stiffness, and measuring the colonel with a penetrating glance, the stranger said to Fanny, "Farewell, sweet girl. May heaven protect and keep you from the sly designs of the wicked, as well as the open attacks of the licentious. Remember the advice of a friend. Trust no man. For as the poet says too truly, women, like princes, find few real friends." Then, waving his hand in the same dignified manner he had done before, and which seemed peculiar to himself, the stranger turned round and left them, pointing his footsteps towards the place he had left. As soon as Fanny reached Grosvenor Street, she retired to her chamber, where she was long before she could recover her wonted serenity. Her terror, indeed, had subsided, but the recollection of the interesting stranger affected her in a manner she could not account for. Every look of his beautiful countenance, every word he had uttered, seemed indelibly engraved upon her memory, and she dwelt with a mixture of pain and pleasure upon the most interesting image her fancy had ever yet contemplated. The ungrateful manner in which Colonel Ross had treated her deliverer pained her to reflect upon, and she felt surprised that a man of the colonel's refined breeding should have shown himself so wanting in common civility, on an occasion which certainly did not warrant such an infringement on the laws of politeness. Fanny little imagined that jealousy had actuated the colonel's behavior, whose suspicious eye had beheld in the stranger a more formidable rival than Lord Ellencourt himself. It was true that he appeared to be past the first bloom of youth, but it was impossible to behold him and not confess that he had a most graceful form and a most beautiful countenance. The soft melancholy that shaded his fine features excited so powerful an interest in the hearts of his beholders that it was not easy to forget, after once seeing him. At breakfast, Fanny related the adventures of the morning, and received a lecture from Lady Maria for her imprudence in walking out so far without any companion but a silly country girl, more likely by her awkwardness and folly to excite than repel impertinence. In this reprimand, Colonel Ross joined with some severity, at the same time reproaching his lady with her carelessness and want of vigilance in permitting a young lady who was under her protection to be so much her own mistress as to be able to go out every morning without her knowledge. "I don't know," added the colonel, "what may be the consequence of Fanny's adventure, the man who delivered her from her first persecutor being, in my opinion, the most dangerous of the two." "Why do you think so, sir?" added Fanny, blushing deeply as she spoke.
"Because," replied the colonel, "I believe him to be a notorious fellow that I remember being tried for a swindler some years ago, and if my conjecture is right, he will no doubt endeavor to make something out of this adventure."
"Oh, dear," said Lady Maria, "I am frightened to death. We shall be robbed, I dare say. Indeed, Fanny, you must be very careful. And above all things, never speak to that man if you should happen to see him. Let his appearance be ever so prepossessing, or the company you see him in ever so respectable. Swindlers have the art of introducing themselves everywhere. Indeed, you cannot be too much upon your guard."
This was the very distrust Colonel Ross had wished to inspire, and he was happy to see that his artifice had produced the desired effect upon his lady, as he well knew she would effectually prevent the approach of the stranger, of whose future attempts to obtain the confidence of Fanny he was really apprehensive, but from a motive very different to the one he had assigned. Fanny did not feel herself at all inclined to give credit to Colonel Ross's insinuations against her deliverer, and she told him that she thought it illiberal to asperse the character of a man he did not know upon no better foundation than the slight recollection of a face that might resemble the stranger's, without the least proof in his power of his being the unworthy person he represented him. "For my part," added the ingenuous girl, "I must confess nothing short of conviction should induce me to think unworthily of that gentleman. His manner was so gentle, yet firm and manly, that it at once excited my esteem and respect. The expression of his eyes, too, spoke the goodness of his heart, and there was a something in the tone of his voice that seemed persuasion itself."
"At 17, replied Colonel Ross, "such a superficial way of judging people may be excused. But believe me, Fanny, when I tell you, as a friend, that it would be very dangerous for you to rely upon so erroneous a guide in choosing your acquaintance. The sound of a man's voice may be very pleasing, and the expression of his eyes well calculated to ensnare the hearts of young girls like you, without his possessing one virtue to entitle him to your esteem."
Fanny was silenced without being convinced, and the conversation was here interrupted by the arrival of Miss Stanhope, who came to ask Fanny to ride out with her.
"If Fanny is prudent, she will refuse your request," said Colonel Ross. "She has made one excursion too many this morning."
"How so?" asked Amelia.
The Colonel then told the story in his own way, whilst Fanny, out of all patience at the account he gave of her kind deliverer, took up the subject and drew a picture of her new acquaintance that delighted Miss Stanhope.
"Oh," said that giddy girl, "I am dying to see your swain, Fanny. I love pensive countenances beyond description.
I hope you are not far gone in the tender passion, for you may be dependent upon it I shall become your rival, provided your delineation be a faithful one." "It will be an honorable rivalship, to be sure," said Colonel Ross with a sneer. "A competition who shall accompany the hero on his voyage to Botany Bay, for there his career will end, depend upon it. He is a swindler, or I am a dunce."
"I should think the latter assertion far more likely to be true than the former," said Miss Stanhope, laughing. "Fanny's account of the charming creature convinces me he is some incognito of consequence, and the glory of developing his real character will perhaps be mine. Thank you, my dear girl, for giving me something to do that will protect me from the demon ennui. The delightful task of finding out who this stranger is will amuse me for this month to come. But mind, you must look out for him and show him to me."
"You are likely to have better employment, Miss Stanhope," said the Colonel. "Employment that will effectually defeat the attacks of that foe to the happiness of the idle and the vain, which you have just mentioned."
"And pray, sir, to what employment do you allude?" asked Amelia.
"The Duke of Albemarle is expected in town today, and it will be hard if the preparations for your nuptials cannot supersede the idle curiosity this silly story has excited."
"A pretty remedy for ennui, upon my honour," said Miss Stanhope. "I am sure the very thoughts of my nuptials, as you call them, give me the vapours in an instant. Married, indeed! I am sure, if the Duke is as much averse to the match as I am, our union will make an excellent subject for tragedy, and may be called the double sacrifice."
"Oh, the perverseness of human nature!" exclaimed Lady Maria. "How many girls would be glad to change places with you! The Duke is a very handsome man, I understand, and very amiable. His title is ancient, and his fortune equal to your own.
The two last considerations are the iron links that unite our destiny," said Miss Stanhope. "All the rest is of no consequence." But I'll tell you what, my dear friend, there is nobody that can judge so well of the fitting of the shoe as the person who wears it. The world may think mine a bullion lot, but it must not be very angry with me for dissenting from its opinion. I would give half my fortune, and all the honor of being a duchess, for the delightful privilege of choosing for myself." Fanny sighed deeply, and then, blushing, because Colonel Ross looked at her as if he wished to penetrate her thoughts, she rose from the table and walked to the window.
"Nay, don't sigh about it," said Miss Stanhope. "Perhaps I might not choose your Swain if I were to see him. And if I should, I would give you the Duke in his stead. And you hear what a fine bargain his Grace is."
"You are a mad creature, Amelia," said Lady Maria. "But I would advise you to see the Duke before you give him away, for you confess you do not know whether you like him or not."
"That is the only thing I do know," replied Miss Stanhope. "I am sure I do not like him, and I am sure I never shall like him, and all I have to wish is that he may not like me, for he has the power of declining the alliance by the trifling sacrifice of 10,000 per annum. But poor I must lose all my fortune if I rebel. But enough of this hateful subject. You have given me the horrors. So if you do not let Fanny ride with me this morning to drive them away, I will never forgive you."
"If Fanny rides with you, I must make one of the party," said Colonel Ross, "lest she should meet with either of those impertinent fellows she saw this morning."
"By all means," said Miss Stanhope, "we shall have no objection to a beau. Will you go, Lady Maria?"
"Oh, no," hastily answered Colonel Ross. "Maria is such a timid rider, I beg we may not have the bore of her company."
"I did not intend to intrude upon you," said Lady Maria, suppressing the tears that rose in her eyes, and endeavouring to speak in a gay tone. "But I remember the time when you used to be delighted if I would condescend to allow you to instruct me in the art of the manège."
"My dear Maria, you talk of things that happened 100 years ago," said the colonel.
"I can only wish, then," replied his lady, "that instances of the same kindness were more recent." And as she spoke, she left the room. Fanny soon followed, to prepare for her ride, and the colonel and Miss Stanhope were left tête-à-tête for half an hour. With the utmost finesse he endeavoured to persuade Amelia into a belief that the person who had rescued Fanny was a person of bad character, pretending that he had a perfect recollection of his person, having seen him tried for the offence he alleged against him.
"All I dread is," said he, "that this artful fellow will presume upon the service he has rendered Fanny, and endeavour to interest her in his favour. The girl is so romantically grateful that it will not be difficult to accomplish such a scheme, and then, depend upon it, we shall suffer by some unforeseen imposition. Join your influence, then, dear Miss Stanhope, with mine, and help to frighten Fanny out of her good opinion."
"If you had not made such a parade about this story," replied Amelia, "perhaps I should have been on your side. But now you seem to set your heart upon it, I shall disappoint you, for I love contradiction. So expect to see me on the opposition benches when the matter comes before the House." Colonel Ross laughed in apparent good humor, but he devoutly wished his fair friend at New York for her perverseness. When Fanny had put on her riding habit, she returned to the breakfast parlor, and Miss Stanhope's carriage conveyed the trio to the spot where the grooms were waiting with the horses. The animal Amelia rode was very spirited, and she frequently expressed her fears that he would be too much for her skill to manage. Fanny, who was the better horsewoman, offered to change with her friend, but the colonel endeavored to persuade her not to venture such a hazardous undertaking, but rather to return to the carriage and defer the ride till another day, when a safer horse could be provided for Miss Stanhope. The giddy Amelia refused to listen to this salutary advice, however, and, as Fanny repeated the offer, the exchange was made. For some time the fiery animal seemed to submit to the superior skill of his new manager, and all went smoothly on, until the sudden elevation of a boy's kite startled him, and darting forward with fury, he presently left his companions far behind him. Terror deprived Fanny of all power to check his speed, and losing her balance, she was thrown to the ground with a violence that stunned her. And when Colonel Ross and Miss Stanhope came up to her, they found her lying, apparently lifeless, in the arms of a gentleman who had stopped his carriage when he saw the accident, and flown to her assistance. For the first few minutes they were too much absorbed in terror to observe the countenance of Fanny's supporter. But when, after the application of cold water to her temples, she revived, and assured her friends that she was not materially hurt, Miss Stanhope instantly recognized in the features of the gentleman who had assisted Fanny too strong a resemblance of the Duke of Albemarle to be in doubt of his identity. Though only a boy of 14 when she had last seen him, the peculiar cast of his countenance was too remarkable to be mistaken, and she had soon the satisfaction of observing that she had the advantage over her intended husband, and was convinced that her own form had undergone a more material alteration in the space of 7 years than his had done, since he appeared not to have the slightest idea who she was. End of chapter 10.